now I feel more nervous than I did beforehand. I feel like I have to do something worthy of being applauded, which I'm probably not going to do. So it's Mothering Sunday, and the first thing I think I need to admit is that my family normally avoid church on Mothering Sunday. This habit started early on in the days of our marriage when Kurt and I had trouble conceiving, and I had a great deal of trouble becoming a mother at all. And so Mothering Sunday used to be a day that reminded me of what I couldn't have. We went to one church, and because we avoided Mothering Sunday so completely, we occasionally got caught out. And I remember turning up to this church, and they asked all the children to come to the front and collect a flower and go and give it to all of the mothers in the church. And I felt absolutely heartbroken. I'd gone to church looking for consolation, and all I got was this reminder of what I was missing. Later, as everyone who knows our family knows, Kurt and I adopted two absolutely fantastic boys who obviously are the giant children who come in with us. Yes, nothing to do with us that they're so ridiculously tall. But then Mother's Day took on another layer of complication. Obviously, their story belongs to them and is private, but I think it's reasonably vague enough to say that they have complicated feelings towards mothers. Mother's Day is a difficult day. Usually, as a family, we choose not to celebrate it at all. But I'm here. And part of the reason I thought it would be nice to talk this morning is that we are a long way from being the only family to find Mother's Day hard. In fact, the older I get, the more I'm realizing that it's actually more unusual to find Mother's Day easy than it is to find it hard. If your mother or your children can't be with you today, whether it's through death, through estrangement, or just through the endless complications of life, Mother's Day can actually be a harsh reminder of a very deep pain. But fortunately for us, when we're in pain, we can trust God. We can come to God and we can expect to be comforted. And that's what I'd like to look at this morning. I'd like to look at the comfort we can take from God. I've split it into three parts because I am a Baptist by nature and so I like to do things in threes. So I would like to have a look at the idea of God as mother, the idea of the mothering we can do as individuals, and finally, the mothering we can do as a church. And just to reassure you, the last one is very short, so don't feel that, you know, I'm not moving quickly enough and it's all going to be horrible and we'll be here at lunchtime. So our main text, this one here, which I'm going to read for you, so don't worry if you can't see it. It's from Isaiah 49. Shout for joy, you heavens. Rejoice, you earth. Burst into song, you mountains. For the Lord comforts his people and will have compassion on his afflicted ones. But Zion said, the Lord has forsaken me. The Lord has forgotten me. Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has borne? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are ever before me. Your children hasten back, and those who laid you waste depart from you. Lift up your eyes and look around. All your children gather and come to you. As surely as I live, declares the Lord, you will wear them all as ornaments. You will put them on like a bride. Though you were ruined and made desolate, and your land laid waste, now you will be too small for your people. And those who devoured you will be far away. The children born during your bereavement will yet say in your hearing, this place is too small for us. Give us more space to live in. Then you will say in your heart, who bore me these? I was bereaved and barren. I was exiled and rejected. Who brought these up? I was left all alone. But these, where have they come from? This is what the Sovereign Lord says. See, I will beckon to the nations. I will lift up my banner to the peoples. They will bring your sons in their arms and carry your daughters on their hips. Kings will be your foster fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. They will bow down before you with their faces to the ground. They will lick the dust at your feet. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Those who hope in me will not be disappointed. This is the passage that gave Kurt and I hope when we were struggling to conceive. When we first came across it, about 10 years ago, I suppose. It's a strange thought. It felt like a promise from God. And indeed, as you may have noticed when we came in this morning, we are now the parents of many children. We have made it to 4. Some of whom were born to us during that difficult time of barrenness. But it is, in a sense, a promise to all of God's children. It's not that everyone's going to be overwhelmed with sons and daughters. Don't panic. There's not loads and loads of children just running at you. But we are all going to be overwhelmed with blessings from God. Now, is it reasonable to start by talking about God as a mother? When I mentioned that was what I was going to preach on this morning, Timothy told me, well, people do normally say that God is our father, which I think is a fair point. We do usually talk about God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. It is a picture that comes up a lot and is obviously incredibly helpful for loads and loads of reasons. But I do think there's plenty of biblical evidence for referring to God as mother, even if it is definitely less common than God as father. So I'd like to just run through a couple of the key passages now to look at the kind of mother that God portrays themselves to be. So this passage, this is from Hosea 13, verse 8. And in the book of Hosea, God self-describes as a mother bear, saying, like a bear robbed of her cubs, I will fall on them. It's not perhaps your immediate image of a mother. The fierce, wild protectiveness of a mother bear. But it is very much one of the strands of being a mother. And I think it's one of the strands that God identifies with very strongly. And sometimes as God's children, it's the strand that we really need. God can be a fierce mother bear, roaring in defense of us. And we can shelter behind him. We can trust that we have a fierce, protective mother God. The next passage Jackie already referred to this morning. This is Jesus speaking. Obviously, it's not a picture of Jesus. That would be ridiculous. Though Jesus had the body of a man, he compared himself not to a crowing cockerel, but to a mother hen longing to hold on to her children. And this is an image that has resounded with me a great deal. How often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing. The image of a God with aching arms longing to hold their children. Again, not the most common picture, if you were to Google mother, but a very, very clear strand of what it means to mother. And God is longing to hold their children. Finally, this passage comes from the Isaiah that I read earlier. And this passage is a little bit more traditional. It's the idea of a mother holding a baby at their breast. But here God talks about how, rather than being just like any other mother, not like a natural bear mother, not even like an archetypal hen mother, God is better than any mother. His love is stronger. The love of God is more reliable and faithful than any mother. Yes, some earthly mothers are not the best mothers. Some people here may know that from bitter experience. But even if your mother fails, God will not. Even if your mother is able to forget, God will not forget you. God's love is the archetypal, perfect mother love. It's an old image to talk about God as mother, and Julian of Norwich obviously put it a lot better than me, as you would expect. Jesus Christ, who himself overcame evil with good, is our true mother. We received our being from him, and this is where his maternity starts. And with it comes the gentle protection and guard of love, which will never cease to surround us. All of us can be born again. All of us can claim Christ as our true mother. If you haven't done it yet, then it is just there for the asking. All of us can claim this true maternity of Christ. And all of us have the right to claim God as our true mother. So, why on earth does that matter? Why is it important? Well, obviously it's important for lots of things, and we could spend many, many weeks happily talking about what it means to think of God as our mother. But I'd like to just look at two. In God, we can find the mothering experiences that we lack on earth. And the best mothers are an image of the nature of God. One of the songs we sang this morning talked about those holes that we have. And some of those are holes in our experiences of mothering. And God is here as our mother to fill them. Every time we manage to mother, we are presenting an image of God to the world. It is a holy thing to do. Now, it's a fantastic picture. And I can say that because Kurt drew it. I didn't draw that one. This picture comes from The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis, which is a slightly niche book that you may or may not have read. I recommend it. It's really, really good. But I will briefly run through what this bit is about. In The Great Divorce, C.S. Lewis describes a picture of what heaven might be like. And there's a person going to look around heaven, and they've got a sort of tour guide who's explaining things to them. And this bit here comes from when, looking around heaven, they see a woman who is surrounded by children and being attended by angels who are tossing rose petals in her path. It's a lovely picture. And C.S. Lewis describes how this woman had no children at all while she was on earth, but she's completely surrounded by them in heaven. And that's because all the people she had cared for became, in a heavenly sense, her sons and her daughters. They go on to say, isn't that a little bit hard on their own parents? And the tour guide says, no. There are those that steal other people's children. Thank you, like me. But her motherhood was of a different kind. Those on whom it fell went back to their parents, loving them even more. Sometimes the hole in our experience of mothering isn't in our experience of motherhood, of being mothered, it's in our experience of being mothers. But I want to tell you that mothering isn't about bearing and raising children, or at least not only about that. Mothering is a verb, and it's a thing that we can do, not a thing that we are. And every one of us, whatever the constellation of our family, is called to mother those around us. Jesus said that his mother and brothers are those who obey the will of God. And if we feel the lack of children or siblings on earth, God will meet this need for us. When I was at university, we had a monk come to talk to our university chaplaincy. And because I was at university and thus obviously a teenager, I asked the obvious question, didn't he miss the possibility of a romantic partnership in life? And I remember what he said. It was that he felt that not having that possibility set a space in his heart for God to fill. That he felt that devoting that part of himself to God meant that God had this very specific and special space in his heart that nobody else would ever take. And I really liked that. Obviously, it didn't mean that I was attracted to becoming a nun myself. I still couldn't quite face that. But this image that if we create a space, or if life creates a space in our heart, it's an opportunity for God to fill it with his love. Some of us might want or need God to fill our space, the space meant for children or siblings. Some of us may have a hole there. All of us are going to need God to fill that space we have for mothering. Nobody can have a perfect mother on earth. So this is Psalm 131. So though you may know it very well, it's slightly unfamiliar because I've chosen to pull up the Message version, which I think is quite fun. And it says, God, I'm not trying to rule the roost. I don't want to be a king of the mountain. I haven't meddled where I have no business or fantasized grandiose plans. I've kept my feet on the ground. I've cultivated a quiet heart, like a baby content in its mother's arms. My soul is a baby content. Wait, Israel, for God. Wait with hope. Hope now. Hope always. We have a book of poems at home called Everybody Was a Baby Once. And it's quite cute and very funny. And it has a little poem about how everybody used to be a baby. And it makes the children laugh very much when I read it. I don't know if I ought to read you part of the baby. So you can see why the children laugh. It says, everybody was a baby once. Everybody was a baby once. Everybody went to beddy with a little furry teddy. Everybody was a baby once. Oh, your daddy was a baby once. And your mummy was a baby once. Yes, your daddy and your mummy used to sit and suck a dummy. Everybody was a baby once. And it's very funny to think of big grown-ups sitting around sucking their dummies. But it's also very true. Every single one of us was a baby once. We were all once helpless babies. And the needs that we had then haven't completely disappeared. I'm sure that we've all seen a baby. If you want to see one, there's one over there. If you've ever seen a baby fully fed and comfortable, sated and snuggling down to sleep, you've seen that picture of utter contentment. And that's what God offers to us whenever we need it. That utter peace, contentment, and trust. There's a part of us that is still a baby that needs to be held and loved. There's a part of us all that wants to go home to the place where we can feel completely safe, where we can relax in the arms of God. And that's what this passage talks about. And that's what it means to talk about God as our mother. It means that we have that home and those arms waiting for us. Even if your earthly mother has been exemplary, but especially if she hasn't, you can rest in the arms of God. Even if your earthly mother lets you down, you can trust in God. Even if your earthly mother has forgotten all about you, you can have faith that God will never forget about you. When we come to God, whether we're coming to church to worship alongside our brothers and sisters, or whether we're coming alone in the privacy of our own rooms, we can rest, satisfied in the love of God. Because those who hope in the Lord will not be disappointed. Our mothers, even the best of them, are flawed. They're human beings. They will make mistakes. Everybody here is old enough to have found that out. Their love can't be perfect. And we can't be completely safe, utterly at peace with them. When we yearn for that love, that perfect, selfless love that needs nothing from us, that's when we can rest in the arms of God. So I've acted out a few images of what it means to mother. Obviously, I've had a bit of help. And what I wanted to point out here is the different types of mothering. As we get older, our needs change, and what we require from our mothers changes. Unborn babies rely on their mothers for life itself. Newborn babies look to their mothers for food. Young children might seek comfort from their mothers. Older children will need comfort less often. They're likely to come when they've actually hurt themselves. Yes, like Mackenzie, very good. Teenagers and young people need guidance from their mothers as they get on in life. Even adult children want emotional support from their mothers. My children obviously don't all have the same needs. My teenager would be completely appalled if I offered him the same kind of mothering that I offer the baby. My young son would really struggle if I tried to mother him the same way I mother the older boys. And our experience of God as mother echoes this. We don't all need the same type of mothering at every stage in our lives. And God, as the perfect mother, is there to meet our individual needs. He knows what we need at different times. One of my mistakes that I like to make as a mother, but feel quite comfortable sharing, is getting my children's names confused. I frequently say, "Mackenzie, stop that," only to hear, "I'm not Mackenzie, so I don't have to." I get them all muddled up all the time. There are just too many, and it's too hard. But God doesn't do that. He hasn't got you confused for somebody else. He knows exactly which one you are all the time, and he never thinks you're Mackenzie. I do. I frequently call you Mackenzie, particularly when you're being very loud. One of the greatest needs that children have is to know that they're kept in mind. And there's a way parents do this. You text your children while they're away. If you make lunchboxes, you might put little notes in to remind them that you're thinking of them. If you've been away from your child for a little while, you might buy a present to bring back to show that you have kept them in mind. I think that's why it's so important for us to hear that God doesn't forget us. We are always on his mind. We're always kept in mind by God. And the Bible is there like a great big lunchbox note to remind us that we were always on his mind, all the way through. He didn't forget. Even before we were born, he hadn't forgotten us. So I've said that I think mothering is a verb rather than just a noun that we can be. I just like to keep checking that it's actually keeping pace with me. And I've divided it, again, into three aspects. There are obviously more aspects of mothering, and I'm sure people could come up with others, and possibly some that they think are more important. But the three I'd like to look at are the idea of mothering as creating, mothering as nurturing, and mothering as nursing. God sets us an archetype of all of these. He models creation, he models nurture, and he models nursing. And I've talked a lot about what it means to be loved by God as mother. But we must never stop at that feeling of being loved. Because God loves us, and he calls us to go on and love others. If God loves us with the love of a perfect mother, then we need to imitate God and mother those around us. But while God finds it easy to know precisely what we need, we may find it a little bit more difficult to work out precisely what the needs are of those around us. So I'd like to look a little bit about what it could mean to be a perfect mother. Okay, so here is the first one. Mothering, like God does, means creating. And here I have a team of creators in front of, I think, a really fantastic painting that they made. Whenever we create something good, we're embodying the mothering nature of God, because God created everything that there is. God constantly renews and sustains our world. Yes, growing a baby is an image of that and an enormous privilege. But so too is the creation of a beautiful artwork or a strong friendship. Whenever we labour to bring something truly good into being, then we are mothering, and we're all called to do that. We all have a role in creating beautiful things in the world. He's brilliant. The next step is nurturing. And again, you don't have to be a woman to be a mother, yes. You could have preached on being a mother. you can Anyone can do mothering. Mothering can be nurturing. When we are all called to serve others, we're all called to make food for people and feed them up. Everybody feels that lovely sense of satisfaction when you make a brilliant meal and you see everybody eat it. That's that feeling of nurturing. And we're all called to nurture others. We can all do that. Everybody is called to give food to the hungry, drink to the thirsty, welcome to the stranger, clothes to the naked, comfort to the sick, company to the prisoner. And when we do so, we both serve Christ, since whatever we do for those in need, we do for him, and we imitate God. Whenever we nurture others, we're acting out the nurturing love of God. And we mother those who need us, just as God mothers us all. This is a very familiar passage. This is Matthew 25, verses 34 to 40. And this is Christ's call for us to mother others. The righteous will say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. We are called to see the needs of others and to attempt to meet them. One of the most challenging things I think about this passage is it doesn't actually say, I asked for a drink and you gave me one. It says, I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. It isn't always easy to see what those around us need. But it is something we should try to do. Because some people won't ask us for help. Sometimes people don't even know exactly what it is they need. The art of mothering is being able to see need and meet it. From the beginning, when children have no words at all, the art of mothering is to see the need. When they're older and they get confused and they think that what they really, really need is loads and loads of sweets and all of the electronic toys they can find, the job of a mother is to see beyond that and to know what they really need. It's hopefully a fairly decent diet and the odd electronic toy. When people are stressed or confused, they don't always know what it is they need. One of the reasons we pray so often and feel that God isn't answering those prayers is that God is the perfect mother, and he sees beyond what we're asking for and what we, and he sees towards what we really need. Obviously, none of us is called to be God, but to look for the need and try to meet it is a true call of mothering. And to mother is to nurse. Whenever we cure others, when we bind wounds, administer medicine, wash bodies, we're repeating the actions of Christ on earth, and we're displaying the nature of God eternal. Of course, some of us spend more time healing than others. Some work in healing professions, and some are carers for their loved ones. Some people spend a great deal of time showing this nursing side of God, demonstrating this aspect of his love. But all of us will sometimes come across those who are hurting. We can all be healing mothers, the mothering hands of God on earth. Yeah, we're fine. Finally, our mother church. Now, Mothering Sunday is traditionally held to be about our mother church. But even that can be quite complicated these days. Yes, it is, because you're part of the church. These days, people move around quite a lot. Many of us have moved many, many times. Many people haven't even always attended church. So what would it mean for them to have a mother church? We don't all have a big cathedral that we were confirmed in to go back and visit on Mothering Sunday. But if we continue to think of mothering as a verb rather than a noun, then I think it's a lot easier to work out what our mothering church would be. And a church can birth us. I have a great fondness for the church in which I was baptised at the age of 13. It was, in a very real sense, the church that birthed me. It's miles away, and visiting it every Sunday would be completely ridiculous. We'd never get back in time for work on Monday morning. But it's still a very special church and an important part of my story. It's the church that gave birth to the new me as a Christian. And for some people, we can be that church. For some very small children, we really will be their very first experience of church. And for some very new Christians, we will be their first church. For some people, we will have the great privilege of being the church that births them, the church where they're baptized. And a church can nurture us. I still draw heavily on the wisdom of the minister from my university chapel. Back when I was a young Christian, still trying to figure out what it meant for me to love God, what it meant for me to be myself, what I was going to do with my life, and who I was going to marry. He was there, and he nurtured me through that very formative time. He had a very deep knowledge of the Bible, and those careful explanations he gave then fed my growing faith and understanding, and help me grow into the person I am today. Though he's not to blame for all of the many mistakes, obviously. That would be unfair. And a church can nurse us. When Timothy, my seven-year-old, was born, I attended a mother and baby group at the church that I was going to then. Every Wednesday morning, I turned up at this group, having dropped my older children off at school with this tiny little baby in my arms. And every Wednesday morning, I was met with a big hug and some coffee and some toast. And it sounds like a very minor thing, but I was so tired and stressed and frazzled. And having that thing to rely on, that reliable nurture, brought me through a difficult and tiring time. We can do that. We can be a church that offers tea and toast and a hug. We can be a nurturing church. We can give people that feeling of being cared for and cherished. And that can be what it means to be a mothering church. So, what about Grace Community Church? I've talked about three early churches that I went to and my experience of being mothered there. Well, of course, we can't be everybody's first church. We can't even be the church where everybody gets baptized. With the way people move around, lots of people are going to turn up already baptized, and baptizing them again would make no sense. We can't do that for everybody. Though we can, of course, be that for some of the congregation, and that will be very special and precious. We can strive as a family to mother everyone who comes here. We can offer a warm welcome to everybody who arrives. And I know that we do that, because I remember the very first time we came to this church, and I remember the very warm welcome we received. Well, in fact, what happened is we arrived just before 11 o'clock and greeted somebody on the door and said, oh, have we got the time right? Because we'd just read it off the internet. And we're told, no, you haven't. The service finished an hour ago and you all need to go home. Which we thought was the funniest greeting we've ever had in a church. And we still remember and tell everybody that it was so wonderful to be welcomed like a member of the family already. We'd only just arrived, and already people were willing to tease us. It was 11 o'clock, in case you're wondering. We were on time, and we didn't go home. We came in. But from that very first visit, we felt welcomed, and we felt like part of the family. We felt like you wanted to have us here. As a church, we can nurture, and I know that we do that. A little while ago, I don't know if you remember, but Andrew talked about the scars that stay when a wound has healed. And it was an image that really spoke to me at that time and that meant a great deal and helped enormously. And I felt that nurturing sustaining knowledge and wisdom of God that we need to keep growing and keep learning about ourselves and about God. I felt that right here. And as a church, we can nurse. And I know that we do that too. Because when I came here a few days after having a very difficult labour with the final of the four children, I was greeted with hugs and empathy and understanding. And I felt loved and cherished and nursed. I know that we do those things. And I hope we will continue to. Final proof that you don't need to have given birth to be a mother or to mother. That's my eldest holding the baby and soothing her back to sleep. In conclusion, to anyone who's missing their mothers or their chance to mother today, to anyone who's regretting the mothering they've received or have given, I invite you to come to God. Take time. Shelter under the wings of a mother hen. If you need to, stand yourself behind the leg of that protective mother bear. Rest, content and replete in your mother's arms. Maybe, as next week begins, you might find an opportunity to mother others. Maybe you'll be able to offer them the joy of your creations, the sustenance of your nurture, and the comfort of your nursing. But just for today, take time to rest in God. Relax in the full assurance that you are, always have been, and always will be, surrounded by the protection and guard of perfect love.